The Body Love Binge is the podcast for you if you're so done with living in the hellhole of an eating disorder, hating your body and constantly wishing you were thinner. If you're truly ready to heal from anorexia, bulimia or binge eating disorder and genuinely make friends with your body, then you're in the right place. I'm your host, Victoria Kleinsman, a food freedom and body love coach, eating disorder and abuse survivor, who's on an absolute mission to love and support millions of women to come back home to self-love and intuition eating. If it's possible for me, I know it's possible for you as well. Thank you so much for being here. I'll see you in the episode. I have got a treat for you today, my queens, because you will already know the amazing Julia and Carla from previous episodes. They're both of my very close friends and previous clients, and I'm still supporting them in a business client sense. So we don't need to introduce you, but without further ado, Carla and Julia, welcome to the Body Love Binge podcast again.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Victoria. I'm so excited, as always.
Me too. And so the title of this episode, I'm sure everyone listening already knows this, is Weird Shit the Eating Disorder Made Us Do. Now, I do want to speak to that, but I also want to speak to some other things. So I'm going to guide us all through some questions. So let's start off with, because I can see Julia first, I'm going to go Julia and then Carla and then me. Where were you, Julia, this time last year?
Well, in a very different place than I am now. I was, I think, just starting coaching with you. I'd done a bit of coaching with someone prior to you. So I was like, I suppose, in early weight restoration.
Yeah. How was you feeling? What was your typical emotions day to day a year from now?
Oh, like 100% fear. Like just constant terror, fear, anxiety. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Carla? A year ago from now, where were you in your life?
I think I was reviewing last week and sharing with you. I think I sent an email by the beginning of October to you. So I was in a very, very different place, same as Julia. Like, I couldn't recognize myself in this moment back, like who I was. I mean, I know I was me, but with a lot of fears, with a lot of doubts, behind me. And of course, full of eating disorder, for the eating disorder, like consuming my life.
Yeah. And where was I? I've not even thought about this for myself, actually. Where was I a year ago today? In a good, really good place. Obviously, I've been in recovery a lot longer. A year from now, I was, of course, running my business, but I didn't have as in-depth of connection to self-love as I do now. I continue to work on myself, as you both know, and you just keep peeling back more layers and finding stuff that you didn't know was there. And I'm just ready for that. So when we have this I think we should make it a yearly thing. Every year we'll meet on a podcast and we'll share like how our year's gone. And so I know this time next year, we'll all be in different places because we continue to grow and evolve because that's what we're all about.
Yeah, sounds like a really good plan.
I love it. Yeah, I'm in.
Awesome. Okay, next question. So Julia, where are you now? How is your life different now?
Oh my goodness. So I was actually talking to my husband about this. The essence of what makes me is the same. The gentleness, the caring for others, the love for others and nature, that's all the same. But it's enhanced. I love who I am. I don't hate myself in any way, shape or form anymore. I have complete food freedom. It's like, just have no thoughts of anything negative with regards to food. Unless it's olives, because they're just always going to be manking.
Agree.
Yeah, I've started coaching. I love, 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 love supporting my clients and just being able to help them find the path that I've been on and find their own freedom, because I tried to put it into words and it is indescribable, the difference in how I feel. There are no words to describe the depth and the difference of how I feel about myself, about the world, just in general. But my world's gone from like a tiny cage with bars to no limits.
Wow. Wow. Carla, where are you
oh
now?
My gosh, I think I'm the same. Like, oh my gosh, it's so many different than 1 year ago to now. I know who I am first, which is amazing. I didn't know who I am. I love to be with myself. I love myself in so many ways. I know I'm growing more and more, but I like me. And I'm happy to be here with me and discover new things about me and discover new things about life. It's so amazing. I'm coaching too. So this journey is helping me a lot, like discover new women that they are suffering, but also like can see through them the beauty they have inside of them and help them to find themselves. That's beautiful. And I always have this analogy. When you saw me for the first time, you was able to see on me things that I wasn't able. Mm-hmm. And now that I am doing this coaching, I am able to see that marvelous thing that all these women have inside of them and they are not able to see. So it's like a blessing. All this journey is a blessing. It's a blessing having you. It's a blessing having Julia and all the gifts that God and the sky gave it to me in this year. Is just grateful for that.
Wow. All from choosing yourself and choosing recovery.
Yes.
Wow. Why am I different? Where am I now? My answer is quite simple. I would say I'm even more myself. I've stepped in to an even more authentic version of me. And what I've experienced with my growth journey is that I feel and think I'm the authentic me, and you continue growing. And then you're like, oh, wow, there's another layer that isn't me. I'm going to unpeel that back, heal what's underneath it, and I get to be even more me. So does that make sense? So I feel like I'm so me now, but then I know in a year's time, I'll be even more me because I've got rid of stuff that I didn't know was there to get rid of.
I've seen a difference in you in the last year.
Thank
Probably
you.
Not as dramatic as you've seen in me, but I've definitely seen you grow and you evolve. And yeah, you are different in a good way, in a really good way.
Thank you. I received that. I look back, and I encourage both of you to do the same. Look back at like the first videos you've done, especially in another year's time, and you can see the growth in how you speak, how your body language is. It's so cool. And if you don't cringe at past photos and videos of you, then you're not growing fast enough. That's just a little thing there. All right, next. Okay, so we are going to go into now the title. So what weird shit did the eating disorder make you do? I mean, even general stuff, both of you, as you share, like, feel free to add that in, because the point of this question is so that the listeners that are listening and the watchers that are watching feel heard and seen, and they understand that we get it. And I do want to say to the listeners and to the watchers, as we all share, I'm sure we're going to be bringing humor into it. We're going to be laughing about what we used to do, but it is by no means funny when you're in it. And we're only bringing humor into it now because we're looking back in hindsight and we're healing with humor. That's something that I love to do as well. But I do want to speak to the fact that if we're laughing, we're not saying it's funny, because it's fucking horrible when you're in it. So I wanted to say that first, because I know us three, the dynamics, the energy, we laugh about things and we make it fun. So Julia, what weird shit did the eating disorder make you do?
Okay, not food related. I had so many things that I had to do or complete in order to feel safe, such as any volume on anything had to be a multiple of two or a multiple of five, or it had to be switched off because it could not be an odd number unless it was multiple of five. And even something like 14 or 16 were too close to 15, so they'd have to be 15 because the fives were more powerful than the evens. And also, when I went for a walk, there's some water meadows near us that have a lot of magpies on. And if I saw one magpie, I could not stop the walk until I'd seen a second magpie because one is for sorrow and two is for joy. And it used to, I was honestly really, I would walk for hours just to try and find a second magpie because I was so scared of the sorrow for one. So yeah, that's, I don't do that anymore. That's a weird shift from the
Any more? I'm sure you've got more. I've got a massive list, which
I could do the whole episode on this. I'll give someone else a turn.
Okay, well, we can bounce off each other, but Carla, what was the most prominent weird shit that you used to do?
Lie. I think life with everything, not just related with food, like I want to hide everything of my life. Like, I don't know. I don't want anything anyone knows about what I did, what I don't do, what I didn't do, anything. And it's funny because now I want to, sometimes I find like, why I'm not going to say that? It's fine sharing. And I want to share everything now. But before it's like, okay, this is mine. I don't want anyone look at it. Or I don't want like just hiding a lot of things. Of course, because my behaviors. One, but not just that. Like, if I go to the library, I don't want anyone knows that I am in the library. I don't know. I don't want anyone knows that I am back home. Like that kind of strange things.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So very secretive with what you were up to.
Yeah. Yes.
That's really interesting. I wonder if you felt a sense of whatever you did, it was wrong or something. So you didn't want anyone to intrude on telling you it wasn't good enough, perhaps?
Perhaps I don't want like anyone knows anything about me because I feel like I want they are going to judge me. So I was like, okay, I don't want to give any explanation to anyone.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Right, well, I'm going to go through my list quickly then. If any of you want to back of any of this, some of this will be generic as well, like a typical eating disorder thing. And so I guess I'm not really sharing absolute. Okay, let me try and pick out the really weird stuff. Yeah, okay. So in the anorexia, I had this. I want to see Julia's face as well. Hold on a minute. Let me just move my screen around. There we go. In the anorexia, I had this weird, well, it wasn't weird because I know understand anorexia, but I had this weird thing with water. So I would only allow myself a tiny cup of water per day. That's it. But what I would do with this little glass of water, I would clear the top shelf of the freezer out, and then I would fill this glass of water up in the morning and I'd put it in the freezer. And when it was like just frozen, but still drinkable with big chunks of ice in. I would allow myself to get it out and sip it a little bit. Then I'd put it in the fridge so it didn't freeze. And then when the ice went, I'd put it back in the freezer and I'd do this weird fucking ritual shit with this water glass and put it out the freezer in the freezer and only allow myself literally 250 milliliters of water a day because anything that was going in me, even if it was air or water, was just. No, so I had this. I don't, you can't even explain that with that. I used to, when I used to be obsessed and addicted to laxatives, I used to have to take the laxative the last thing I'd. So if I'd taken a laxative, I couldn't even drink water after it. I couldn't have any single thing pass my lips until the laxatives had got rid of everything that was
I
inside.
did that.
So it was like
Yeah.
this is going in and nothing else can it can't. I'd
Yeah, I
rather
did
die.
that.
Yeah. What else is really strange stuff? Feel free to jump in at any time, either of you.
Well, I can talk about the icing sugar.
Yeah, that
I
one, I resonate with
used to
that.
bake all the time. I never ate it, but I used to I suppose I was a feeder. I just used to want other people to eat it all the time. I used to spend hours and hours baking. But I was freaking out the whole time about food touching my hands and absorbing calories. So I had really chapped and sore hands where I was constantly washing them to try and get all traces of food off. And when I used to use icing sugar, which was quite a lot because I baked every single day, I would have to hold my breath and put like t-shirts and stuff over my face so that I didn't inhale any calories from the icing sugar cloud. And then I often used to have to go outside and start taking deep breaths afterwards just to try and make sure that it was all clear and there was no icing sugar. And quite often had to wash my face as well so that there was no trace of icing sugar.
I get that. Carla, what did you have anything around food like that? If anyone offered you like something you just absolutely couldn't even have one grape or something?
Of course, like any sugar, like that will be my just start running again or moving a lot. But you know what I remember, like and I don't know if you relate it, but I have certain food that was just my food and no one can take that food. Like I keep it in a side of the fridge. And it's like my food and no one there to talk, to just touch it. Cause it's like, I remember my friend like, really, are you going to just eat that? Like almost like it's dangerous. Don't eat it. It's just for mine. That's horrible. But because I don't want to share that. And everybody was afraid of me. Like, this is Carla's thing, not even there to touch it.
I used to hide food. I used to hide chocolate bars all over the place. I never ate them. But I used to hide them so that nobody else could have them, which makes no sense. But I did used to hide. I had them like hidden in the back of the wardrobe and all that sort of thing. Actually, I really ought to go and check that there's nothing festering in there. I forgot about that. You always used to hide it. Yeah. I don't know why, because I had no intention of eating it. But it was just like safe to have it, I suppose.
That's exactly it. I used to, so one of my things in the bulimia especially, I used to hoard it and hide it. So I'd be like, I don't know why I'm thinking of an old woman with collectibles. Because I would starve myself all week. And then as soon as it came to Saturday morning, I would binge from Saturday morning to Sunday night. So every Monday morning, I would start, this would be the highlight of my day. I would go to the shop and buy things to put in a secret space in the wardrobe that no one knew about. And I would build it up, this mass, because this was when I was binging as well, this massive stash. Then by Friday night, I would literally just go upstairs and like look at, basically like I was addicted to like looking at the chocolate. And I would smell the wrapper and I'd be like, oh my God, I would have a countdown on my phone.
Wow.
You know how people have a countdown for a holiday or a wedding? Yeah. I would have a countdown in minutes and seconds of when I could open that first bar and then binge. So I used to hide stuff as well. And in the anorexia, before I was binging, I don't know about you two, I had to have set times. If any fucking person made me 1 minute late from eating my lunch, I would be evil.
I had set times, but it was more like if it couldn't happen at that time, then it just couldn't happen. If I missed the time, that was it. It just wasn't allowed to happen.
Wow.
Yeah. I was the same like that. Like by the time, if we say a time or something happens and couldn't happen, it's like just getting crazy. Like, oh, my life is going to be ruined in this moment. What is going to happen now? Like just the time. Oh my, it was freaking crazy. The time, the repetition you said. Wow.
Yeah. And I think the anger, like you joked that, you know, well, you weren't joking, you were being serious, Carla, that people were scared of you if they touched your food. I had the same thing as well. Like if, you know, we can't miss this time because Vic will go fucking insane and it's just easier to abide to her fucking rules than deal with the angry monster that would be revealed. And that's not, I mean, Julia, I know, has an issue with anger, which is probably why you don't. Didn't feel angry.
As in, I'm not angry, not that I am really angry.
As in, you just disassociated from anger. But those behaviours and those characteristics, they aren't really who we are. It's a fear response that's all entwined in the eating disorder. We're not angry people, but we become batshit crazy if someone messes up our OCD eating disorder ritual.
Yes.
I used to get really offended, actually. Really offended if the people didn't eat the baked stuff like me. Yeah, I used to find it really offensive if they didn't have it, and used to, I think, quite often pull guilt trips on them to make them eat it.
You too.
Yeah, the same as me. Yeah, like I would get super offended if someone don't eat the whole cake. Like, why? It's delicious. But I even try it, like a little piece of that cake. Yeah. Or in the other side, when someone there to try my food, they hate my food. Like, no one likes the food that I eat. Like, and I get why now. Like, I even want to eat it now. But
yeah.
But like, I see the face of anyone like, it's delicious. What do you say? Like, and now it's like, okay, no, I can. You know what? My husband loves cauliflower, but I've been me like maybe 2 months ago. I hate cauliflower. I eat so many cauliflower in my life. I can't even see cauliflower now. Like, I don't want cauliflower in my life now.
I have that with any kind of vegetable soup. I literally have vegetable soup PTSD from all the times I've gone on the cabbage soup diet, and all I've eaten for breakfast, lunch and dinner for weeks is cabbage soup. And even if I'm at a really nice restaurant where they use butter and oil, like, I can't. The second I taste vegetable soup, I'm like having a trauma response. I can't.
I feel like that about cauliflower rice.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, it's so crazy. What else did we used to do in the bulimia? I've got here a lot of times, like Carla said, I would just outright lie. I would just lie to people about what I had eaten, what I hadn't eaten. And in anorexia recovery, I'd be so manipulative. I'd be like to my mum, I'd be like, yeah, it was so hard because at lunchtime I really faced this fear of food and I did it and I'm so proud of myself. And I had fuck all, but I was like trying to convince her by giving her a big story around what I'd overcome, and I'd make crumbs on the worktop, and like I would literally plate up the food, say if it was toast and butter, physically do the toast, physically butter it, make crumbs, and then put it in a bin next door, the food, so all mum saw was like the plate, the empty plate and the crumbs and stuff.
I lied. I didn't lie in recovery because I wouldn't have done that to my coach.
No,
but before, I lied all the time about what I'd eaten. I always made excuses like I'd eaten at a friend's or I'd had something out and stuff. And I used to sneak stuff off of my plate and put it onto my boys' plates without people noticing, or drop it down for the dogs. Yeah, I lied all the time.
Yeah.
I didn't have dogs, but I put it in a napkin, right? Like putting in a napkin, or just like cleaning my mouth. This is just gross, sorry, but it's like cleaning my mouth and take out the food in my mouth and put it away without chewing, and they're like things like that. Like, yeah,
I've done that. I used to chew and spit.
Yeah,
you get the flavor. I mean, honestly, and I even went on, and of course, anyone listen to this, like, trigger warning, I'm going to talk about, how do I say it, a trigger without telling you what it is. But if you're really in severe anorexia and you're not getting recovery, it's up to you to pause this bit. I used to go on pro anorexia websites, and I used to be looking, I don't know about you, I used to be like looking at all the girls that were pro anorexia and like consume. I don't even know how I got on that. Those websites, I think now I don't think you can get on them, but I used to look at all that shit and like involve myself in that. And what I learned from that was, this was another thing in the anorexia, I had to be able to see every single rib and every single bone of my back, and then I was okay. So I'd check and I'd be like, can I see every single rib? Can I see every bone? Are my hips massively protruding? Okay, I'm safe.
I had to get my finger and thumb to touch around the top of my arm to go all the way around, like you do it around your wrist. I had to do it around the top of my arm. And if I couldn't, then I couldn't eat and I had to move more.
Yeah. The same for me with the bones. Like, I need to touch my bones everywhere. If I can touch it, it's like, something is wrong. I need to start stop eating now because I'm gaining weight. And I don't know, but also with some sizes. I mean, I remember in this roller coaster of during my journey in the eating disorder, I have like a special size that I couldn't pass over that size, because if I pass over that size, it could be like almost dying, and right, so it's going to be restricted to the highest and the high in the highest level. So because I think that wasn't my size.
Yeah, and I wanted to look sick. And obviously unconsciously and through a lot of therapy, I understand why I wanted to look sick. So I just wanted someone to take care of me. And I wanted someone to see physically the emotional pain I was in. But the sicker I looked, the happier I felt. I don't know about you two, about you don't even want to look healthy or well. You want to look sick.
Yeah, I was in a WhatsApp group with some friends and we weighed in every week. And every time any of them lost weight, because they were always on a diet, which I took as like a personal insult that they were on a diet. I don't know why.
Competition.
I found it really insulting that they were on a diet. And anytime they lost weight, I had to lose more. I had to lose more.
Yeah.
Even if that meant like running all night as well as doing stuff all day, I had to lose more weight than them. And I also used to lie about my weight and say I was heavier than I was so that they wouldn't be like, you're not allowed on this group.
Or yeah, able to reach your goal. Maybe able to be so thin as you are, right? Like maybe a height that like, okay, I don't know. But what happened when someone told you, oh, you look better? What's like an insult for you? Like, what?
In recovery.
Like I look, no, in recovery. Like, well, if so, like if you gain weight in this roller coaster, because it's not like always you be super lean. Sometimes you get a little bit of weight and then you're going back, like that kind of thing. Or that day you just make up better, or that day, I don't know, but someone say like, oh, you look better. It's like, what? How am I going to look better?
They basically, when they said to me in recovery, oh, you're looking really well, they may as well have said, you're a fat bitch and no one's going to love you. That's what I heard when they were saying, you look better because I'm not emaciated anymore. They may as well have said the other thing that I shared. It's mad, isn't it?
Yes.
And in the binge eating, I do want to speak to this because I think some people will be able to resonate with this. I used to, you would have heard this, I've shared this before on multiple times, but I used to like eat in the broom cupboard when I was at work. So I'd like, again, hoarding and hiding. So because I was on the banking floor, so when I was working at a building society, I would be on the floor. I wouldn't be behind the back. So when people had birthdays, which was practically every bloody day because it was so big, they would bring like chocolate and sweets and put them in the back. And I would be literally panicking. I'm not going to get the chocolate. Someone's going to get it. When I literally be like, oh my God, I'm not going to get any because everyone's going to eat it. So I would go to the toilet and like literally like grab stuff and like put them like in my pockets or down my bra or whatever, and then go to a broom cupboard, take them out, hide them, and then go and eat in the broom cupboard so where no one knew. And then I also, when I was with in the Netherlands, when I first met Wouter, I moved here, when he would have a shower, I would quickly go in the freezer because I'd froze brownies to stop myself from eating them, but I'd get them out the freezer, whack them in the microwave, and go and eat them in the toilet. And just binge and inhale. And it was always from this like, ah, like panic, can't get enough. Like it was a massive like anxiety response to food. So I hid wrappers in next door's bins and right at the bottom of the bin so no one could see what I'd eaten. And there was so much shame around it when I did eat. So when I was binging, I don't know if you two ever experienced binge eating before.
No, the shame, yes. I used to... I'm laughing about this now because it seems so silly. I used to sniff chocolate buttons. I used to hide in the toilet and open a packet of chocolate buttons and sniff the buttons. And then I used to feel so ashamed of doing it. And then I used to try and bury them in the bin so that nobody knew that I'd had the chocolate buttons. Even though I hadn't eaten them, I just used to sniff them. And yeah, I felt so much shame around doing that.
Well, my mom remind me just right, like, when I was a teenager, I used to hide like a lot of food and then eat it there. And she found out that I really had troubles because she found these wraps all over my room, like cookies and that kind of thing. And then I mean, it was not like a passy, but I remember go to the store hiding, and then eat like some chips or some cookies, and then read it up. But another thing that I just remember is like if someone was in the bathroom and I can read it out in a second, because it has to be like eat it and go out, like not even past like 20 minutes, because if it was 20 minutes in my mind, like everything is going to be in my system. I can do that. Sorry if that's trigger.
No,
but
this is what you're talking about, because you're talking about purging by making yourself sick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I used to make me sick, but in the kitchen, you know, where you so I need clean all the kitchen and do my vomit there. Like, what's disgusting? But I need to read it out, and I like just looking at no one's came because someone was in the bathroom. I can just read it out.
Yeah. And that's a lot a client shared with me, because thank God I couldn't make myself sick. I've tried multiple times in the past with toothbrushes and all sorts, and thank goodness I physically can't make myself sick. And clients have shared with me before that they've obviously purging so much, it's blocked the drains up. So they've had to go outside and like unblock the drains themselves from their own vomit to try and hide it from the husband, because there's just so much. So there is so much shame around the behaviors, but there's nothing you're doing wrong. It's purely just the eating disorder. And like I said in my presentation that Julia saw that I did the other night, it's the question isn't why the addiction, and I mean addiction to the restriction, is why the pain? Like, what's underneath the reason for even having the eating disorder? Because 99% of the time, it's not just to be thinner because of diet culture that perpetuates all of it, but there's a deeper reason underneath it all, especially when bulimia starts to happen as well with the purging and all of it.
Yeah, I think for me, the diet culture thing was not about trying to fit an ideal so much as just trying to be acceptable. It wasn't a certain look, it was just to try and be accepted.
Yeah.
But I would never be accepted because I didn't accept myself.
Exactly. And that diet culture, which is the norm, unfortunately, it's a great excuse and a easy way to hide an eating disorder.
Yes, it is. It's the best excuse. I mean, you are right. It's not the reason, because we have an eating disorder, but it's the best excuse and it's the best way to hide. Because you literally can't find any excuse to do your behaviors in the diet culture. Anyone.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it's, oh, I'm gluten-free, or I'm lactose intolerant, or, you know, I'm on keto, intermittent fasting.
I'm fasting.
Yeah. And then you usually get, oh, I wish I had your willpower. And you get praised for it.
Yeah.
I mean, and one last thing that I want to share, because I think this is really relevant, then we'll go into some more different questions. When I used to buy my binge food, this was before self-service checkouts. So I'm only 36, I'm not that old, but yeah, so self-service checkouts have only been out a couple of years, I think. Either way, it was when you had to go to a person, they had to like scan the food. And every time I would go, because I binged every night, it got to a point where every night I was binging and I'd starve all day. So I'd have to pick different times of going because I didn't want the same person to see the foods I was getting every night. And then I would be like to the cashier, yeah, girls' night. Yeah, I've got girls coming round, because I'm buying like enough food for like seven people. And I would lie and have to justify. So I'd feel so much shame. The cashier probably didn't even give a shit what I was buying it for, but I had so much shame. I'd be like, yeah, we've got, you know, girls' night, movie night, you know, because I felt so bad about what I was buying, because I knew I was going to sit and eat it all.
Yeah, that happens to me. I remember in Mexico, there is a lot of food streets, right? So I used to work really close to my grandparents' house, and my grandparents' house everybody knows them in that place. So I was in my mind, like I never count, I never remembered it just right now. Like I remember walk and find the, let's say the far, like, yeah, the far away street food, but still walking, buy the food, but like just tell a story, like, yeah, change my name, tell a story that I, like, eh, I even say in that moment, I maybe like 22. Yes, I have kids. I need to buy food for my kids.
Wow.
That's so funny. So you basically change your name and you've got magic kids.
Yeah, magic kids, magic family. I was like, just, you know, like telling the stories, and just the stories came out of my mind. And I go back, like, very proud of myself to, like, everyone. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry for, thank you, Victoria.
Wow. I mean, the eating disorder just takes away who you are. And I know two of you have, both of you have said, the essence of who you are has always been there. It has for me too. But who you really are, allowing yourself to just be that, it just completely gets squashed and restricted by the eating disorder.
Yeah, the essence is still there, but it wasn't accessible.
No, yeah, exactly that. Right, what question do I have for you next? Julia, and obviously Carla next. What did you think was the hardest thing about recovery for you, and how did you navigate that?
Wow. But, well, there was kind of two, but the first hurdle for me to get past was allowing myself to ask for help. And like, because I always felt that I had to make out to the world that I had it all, like had all my shit together, and that I never thought I was perfect, but I thought I had to try to be perfect.
Yeah.
And I thought that any form of needing help meant I was weak and that I couldn't do anything. And so admitting that I needed help was huge. And yeah, allowing myself to cry, that was massive for me because I hadn't cried for 40 years.
Yeah. I was so honoured that it was on one of our calls. How did you ask for help then? You know, because it was such a huge block for you.
My friends had worked out that I was pretty sick. They knew, and they kept trying to offer help, and I kept butting it away and saying I was okay, I was okay. And I think I just got so low. I just got where I had nothing left. I couldn't, that mask that you sort of like put on to pretend everything's okay and to convince people, I guess I lost it. I couldn't find it. I couldn't put it on. I didn't have the strength or the energy. And yeah, I just had to, I think, but first of all, I just had to accept help that was being offered rather than ask for help.
Yeah, that was the first step.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then when I really hit rock bottom and decided to take my life, then when I didn't, when I felt that I couldn't do that to my children, then I realized that I literally had to ask for some serious help because I couldn't carry on without it. I didn't have anything left to give. And so I guess what fired me to ask and to finally realize I couldn't do it on my own was my children.
So they basically saved your life.
Yeah.
You gave them life and then they saved your life.
Yeah. But it was kind of unknowing for them because I didn't share anything with them. I hid it all because I felt that they shouldn't ever have to see me in any form of weakness, that I should always be like the mum and look after them, like that they should never ever look after me.
Oh, I wonder why you did the opposite. I wonder why that was a we either do exactly the same as our what we had as a child as what our parents were, or we do the complete opposite. And yours was the complete opposite of what you've experienced.
Yeah, I guess so. I've never thought of it that way.
Complete opposite. And you can see why you didn't want them to have the same experience as you had. And this was all unconscious.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, yeah, there was no conscious thought in it. I just felt so strongly that they should never, ever have to look after me. I should look after them. Mm. So I kept as much as I could to begin with.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Carla, what was the hardest thing for you in recovery, would you say, and how did you navigate it?
I think my digestive issues at the beginning, I just feel so bad. The first month was really, really difficult. Work with the sensation of fullness in my stomach was really hard for me. Feeling full, I think we work hard in that, and I think also the waning gain was hard for me. Obviously we, you know, waited, but I can feel my clothes different, and I was scared of see people, and they start saying things to myself, right? Because they noticed that I'm gaining weight. So I was scared to meet my friends or meet someone else besides my family, because I was thinking they are going to notice that I'm gaining weight. Which they didn't. And they just said like, oh, you look so good. but in that moment I was okay. Maybe they don't notice, but I also feeling better and it was different than before. Like I received the good, because I was in a different place and I really want to recover. But yeah, I think that was the most difficult. And also to accept that I need help and tell my family that I need help. Mm. I think that was big. And confront my kids, because I feel always like I need to tell them what is going to happen. In this process, because at the first I didn't know what to expect about myself, how I'm going to react, how I'm going to change. So I want to warn in them like, okay, I'm this and I don't know what is going to happen.
Yeah, wow. How did you, let's speak to digestive discomfort, because that's really common, isn't it? How yeah. did you navigate that? Because some people cut back on what makes them bloated and everything. And you know my take on that. So how did you navigate that extreme physical discomfort and of course emotional discomfort as well from the physical?
Yeah, well, the only way is keep doing it. I mean, the discomfort is there. Give yourself compassion, because as you say, it's emotional, because it's like, in my case, it's like, okay, you deserve this because you do it for you. So you, what's this mind like, put in like a punishment. Okay, this is your punishment because you did that. But it's like also in that more like compassion. Okay, you need to pass through, but not as a punishment. You need to pass through because it's the way to heal it. So it's different. The mindset is different. And you help me in that moment, like, okay, sometimes I walk, but to be honest, the only thing is pass away and trust in going to pass away.
Yeah.
Because I was, sometimes it's most the worry that this feeling or this uncomfortable situation is going to persist for all your life. And it's not. It's not going to persist forever. I know it's feeling so bad, but just holding the highest, the highest purpose of that is you healing, and your body knows what to do after all.
Yeah, the only way to the other side is through. There's no shortcut. There's no way around. There's no magic bridge.
Nope.
The only way to the other side is through.
Yes. And if and if I know maybe someone that is listening is like, oh, but you didn't feel that as I'm feeling. I think the three of us feel, if not the same, feel really, I mean, the top of discomfort, right? We were in the top in different ways. And the three of us passed that through.
Yes. And look at us now.
Yes.
For me, it was without a shadow of a doubt, weight gain. There was points in my life for 20 years, I would rather have died than gain weight. I was completely petrified. I need a stronger word than petrified for weight gain. And of course, then when it happened, I didn't die. And then when I did the body image work and the self-love work, I was able to go from like feeling like I want to literally die because I cannot, I want to get out of my skin because I'm just wanting to resist this weight gain and what I'm making that mean. I was able to just be okay with looking and then get to know my new body. And of course, it's a journey for sure. But for me, weight gain was my biggest fear for my entire life. So weight gain was mine. And now I can honestly, hand on my heart, say I am not afraid of weight gain. In fact, this jumpsuit that I have on now, the zip literally won't do up. I've come back from England where I've been going out for more meals and there's just more different foods around than my standard routine over here. And basically, this is too small for me and I can't do it up. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to wear it with the zip open because no one can tell when I'm sat here. And if it doesn't fit me in a couple of weeks, then I'll just chuck it out. Like, my body's going to do what it's going to do. And for me to be able to stand here or sit here and say, I am not afraid of weight gain is an actual miracle. So anyone listening who resonates with the petrifying fear of weight gain, you can get over that fear, I promise you. All right, so we've got about 15 minutes max. So what question do I want to choose next? What would you say? So we did a lot of work on values.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that's important, in my opinion, to help you with your recovery journey. What values and characteristics do you think someone needs to have in order to recover? And obviously, I'm going to ask both of you individually, but they're probably going to be the same. So whoever wants to go first can go first.
So Carla has the green. Oh no, I've got it now. Oh well. hope.
Hope. Yes. Yeah. Forgiveness. Or forgive.
Yeah. Good one.
Always love.
Love is always the answer.
Yeah.
I would like to add in, which one? Dedication, determination, or commitment to the recovery process.
Yes.
I guess resilience is a better, because dedication and discipline, it feels so off.
Determination. Yeah.
In my case, faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a big one for me too, without realizing it. Like, I needed to believe in something outside of myself that was going to show me there was more to life than restriction and what my body looked like.
Yeah.
So I guess that is hope and faith.
Me, trust. That I put all my trust in you
mm-hmm.
because you believed I could do it. I didn't believe I could do it, but I trusted you.
That's important. Yeah. I think so. Let's recap. Hope, faith, trust, love, forgiveness, resilience. Was it commitment or dedication? Like that kind of vibe?
Yeah, determination.
Yes. Determination.
Determination to recover. And you would have heard me say this time and time again, but my mantra was, and of course I'm going to have a swear word in there because it's what I do, whatever it fucking takes. So that, I guess, was like determination, bring it on, whatever it takes. I just need to get away from where I am right now because I cannot do this anymore.
I'd like to add courage, but I think that it's not so much that you've got to go in it with courage, but you've got to acknowledge that to be in recovery, you have courage. Just taking those steps is incredibly courageous. So it's not like you've got to be a courageous person to do it. It's just acknowledging that by doing it, you are incredibly courageous.
Definitely. I think when we face fear, automatically we become courageous, like you're saying, because on the other side of fear lies freedom. Yes. And there's no way around it.
I never thought I was courageous at all. I never thought I was brave, courageous at all. But taking the steps to recover and facing all those fears is an incredibly courageous thing to do. So I didn't know I was courageous, but I was, because I did that.
Yeah.
And you can get addicted to that. I am like, okay, thank you, Victoria. Now I want to go to all my fears.
That's a great thing to be addicted to. If we're going to be addicted to something, it's consistently facing fears, because obviously on the other side of fear, there's growth, there's freedom, there's getting to know yourself, the self-realization. There's so much on the other side of fear.
Yes.
For all of us. And so last question to each of you. Okay, two questions, but this kind of can come into one. What would you say to someone who's listening to this, watching this, whatever platform they're using, and they're ready to start recovery? What would you say? And was your journey, including weight gain, worth it?
Okay, so that's completely different questions.
Just roll with it. I guess the first one, the last question is better to answer first, however you want.
Yeah. So I would say to them that recovery is 1,000,000,000,000,000,000% worth it. And that there's no fixed way that you have to do it. There's no right way. So don't compare yourself to other people. Just because I've done this, or Carla's done this, or you did that, doesn't mean it's right for that person. So walk your own path. And it's so more than worth it. It's the difference is just, as I said earlier, indescribable. I feel like I've lived more in 1 year than I lived in the first 48 years, 49 years. Yeah, 49.
Wow. Wow. Carla.
I mean, I sustain what Julia says, totally worth it. Like, there's no words to describe the place after a year I'm here. And I think you are 6, 7, I don't know how many, but it's like, it's no way to understand where are you going to finish. And that's because you need the trust, because you don't know, but I can, on three of us can tell you, like, it's worth it, and it's not going to be anything that you can imagine, because whatever you imagine right now, if you are just thinking to start, is your mind is not it's not going to let you go to fly in your imagination to that place that you could be, because it exists inside of you, but you can see right now. So just trust and look the stories. As Yura said, we are different. Maybe your story is totally different, but look the stories that help you to increase that trust and courage that you have inside of you, because it's possible and it's totally worth it for everyone.
It is.
Yeah.
I've got one other piece of advice, actually, is you can't do it all at once. Just take one day at a time. Because if you try and look at the whole thing, it's just overwhelming.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would add on, similar to, of course, what you both said, if I could give someone, pun intended, a taste of what we feel within ourselves, the inner peace, the self-love, and continued growth as well, if I could give someone a taste for a second, they would jump on the recovery journey in a heartbeat. If they just knew a tiny, tiny bit of what it felt like we have, they would be like, bring it the fuck on. Like, I'm okay, it's going to be hard, but I know I can have that. I'm not stopping. I would also say get support.
Yeah.
Coach or a decent or someone, a therapist, whatever it is, someone who you trust, because trust is a big one, and who has been there and come out the other side. I think that's priceless.
In my opinion. Yeah, because you can learn so much from books and from courses and stuff, but you can't learn how it feels. Mm-hmm. So somebody that's felt those feelings can really get you. They can really understand.
Yeah.
Yes. Someone, and maybe this is a question for you, because the other way I was talking to someone and he said, like, don't you think that put it like the capacity of recovery is for everyone? It's like putting in them like so much pressure, because how you know everyone can recover? I say, well, if you don't give that to everyone, it's like just don't stress yourself. It's like make you so small that you cannot able to recover. Mm-hmm. What did you answer for that? Because that answer surprised me. And I don't know if someone that is listening maybe feel like it's a lot for them to recover, but I think everyone can recover. I truly believe it.
Yeah, I
1,000%. And what Julia said, interesting, the word pressure. So whoever asked that question, I would like to coach or ask questions to them, because they use the word pressure to recover. There's a reason why they've used the word pressure. I mean, it will go back in their childhood and all of that. But why would recovery have to feel like a pressure, especially an external pressure, when it's a choice to heal? And so going back to what Julia said, taking one day at a time with support, and just for now, like Dawn says in our group, just for today, just for today, just for today. And there's no pressure to recover. It's a choice.
Yeah, you can even take it hour by hour, can't you, if a day is too long.
Yeah, I think using the word pressure is something, an expectation from someone external wanting you to do something, but it needs to come from you. And what I would like to end on before I ask both of you how people can work with you, and as I hold my magic wand that I'm holding right now, my crystal, is speaking to all the listeners, you already know what it feels like to be in the eating disorder. However long you've been in it for, a year, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, you know what it feels like to be in the eating disorder. How about allowing yourself to know what it feels like to recover? You already know what it feels like to be in the eating disorder. So why not do something different and listen and trust us? I know it, you know, you can't just do that. You have to feel it. But like Carla said, allow yourself to trust and see what's possible for you, because you already know what eating disorder's like.
And have you ever met anyone that regretted recovering?
Never.
Nope. Never.
Never. Only when someone's been in the eating disorder recovery center and they've basically fucked up their recovery journey for them and they've been re-traumatized, but not with the way we do it, no.
No, that's not recovered though, is it?
No.
No. 100%.
So how, so Julia and Carla, so obviously start with Julia because that's the theme today. How can how can people work with you? What are your offerings for eating disorder recovery?
Okay, so I generally do one-to-one coaching, which is weekly Zoom sessions and unlimited WhatsApp support in between. And people can contact me through Instagram, which is at Julia Trehane, or through my website, which is juliatrehane.com. And yeah, just have a chat and see where we go.
Thank you. Carla, what are your offerings at the moment?
Oh, well, I am also one about coaching, most in Spanish, to all Hispano-American people. And also I give in some conference also in Spanish to in prevention eating disorders. So you can check also in my website. I think you are going to put all the information down.
Yeah.
And also in my Instagram, you can find me. And yeah, I mean, I'm here. And I have the best guy here, Julia, and of course, Victoria. So don't worry, if I don't know something, I will just contact them and they will. We are like a big brain here.
We're a family.
Heart. Yeah. Brain, heart, and heart. What?
We're a family.
Yeah.
We've got each other's back. So are you offering your, are you still offering the free week, or is that at capacity?
Oh, yeah. No, I still offering. I have still some spots. So I have the free 1 week. So they say you have two calls, the first to, you know, met us, and the other one, like, let's see how we finish the week and what's up. To say, like,
amazing. Open. So take advantage of that offer. I know Julia did that, but now she's at full capacity, so she's got no more space. And Carla, if someone did want you to coach in English, are you open to that?
Yes. I mean, as you can see, my English is not 100%, but I totally can speak English and understand it. So, and I always say the language of love is not just about language, it's about love. So,
oh, yeah. What a way to end.
It's fab.
Well, Julia and Carla, thank you from the bottom of my heart. This is definitely going to be a yearly thing for sure. And I know we're all going to collaborate in the future, whether it's a physical recovery center in different parts of the world or something. So thank you for being here, and thank you for your time and your wisdom. And thank you for trusting me to start your journey all those months ago.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for bringing us to life. Thank you. We need a cake today. Why we didn't bring a cake?
That would be nice. I haven't got a cake.
Yeah.
What's that, Jack?
Well, you're second best, but I've not got any over here. We'll have a virtual cake session one time for sure to celebrate all of us.
Thank you. I love you both.
I love you too.
You're amazing.
So much love. And listeners, please tag us, share us, comment on this episode if you're on YouTube. Reach out to us, let us know how you found it, and we're here for you. Okay, you can do this. Much love.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please share, subscribe, and leave me a 5-star review. Your support means the absolute world to me, and it really does help me to get my podcast out there for those that need it. Thank you.